Welcome to Simply Scottish, a podcast of all things Scottish, with music, features, interviews, and more, on the web at www.simplyscottish.com.
Welcome to Simply Scottish, your regular dose of Scottish culture, history, and music. I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for tuning in. You might recognize our opening music as one of Dougie MacLean's more popular instrumental pieces. It's called The Gael, and it first appeared on his album The Search, before later being featured in the popular 1992 film The Last of the Mohicans. On this episode, a profile of one of Scotland's most popular and enduring musicians, Dougie MacLean. Enjoy more episodes of Simply Scottish by subscribing to the show on iTunes. In the podcast's directory or app, just search Simply Scottish. You can also find the show on our website, along with playlists for each episode to help you track down music you like. Visit www.simplyscottish.com. And while you're there, drop me a line to tell me where you're listening. I always appreciate hearing from listeners. For many, Dougie MacLean is a man who needs no introduction, but for those who are new to his music, here's some background info. MacLean has built an international reputation as a songwriter, composer, and performer with his unique brand of evocative, lyrical, roots-based songwriting. Perhaps no other artist of the late 20th century has captured the soul of Scotland with more authenticity or emotion. His song Caledonia has become one of Scotland's most popular contemporary songs. His music has been covered by dozens of artists, including Paolo Nutini, Amy MacDonald, Frankie Miller, and Kathy Mattea. He has received two prestigious Tartan Clef Awards, a place in the Scottish Music Hall of Fame, a Lifetime Achievement Award from BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards, and even an OBE in the New Year Honours List. His recording career spans over 30 years, from his early recordings with the Tannahill Weavers to the many albums released on his own Dunkeld Records label. In 2014, MacLean celebrated his 40th year as a musician by teaming up with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra on Till Tomorrow, an album of reimagined favourites, one of which you'll hear at the end of today's show. And by the way, if you're looking to hear his popular song Caledonia, you won't find it on this episode because we just don't have room. But we do have an episode called Caledonia, a Celebration, which is full of renditions of the song Caledonia, along with some historical background on the name. So look for that, another episode of Simply Scottish, called Caledonia, a Celebration. Without further ado, let's get straight into our interview with Dougie now, as he discusses his early inspirations, the enduring popularity of Scottish folk music, how the digital revolution has influenced his career, and more. Many singers and bands would list you as one of their musical influences. So who influenced you as a young musician?
Well, it was pretty funny. I grew up in kind of rural Perthshire here in Scotland, and both my mum and dad played. My mum played a little bit of a melodeon, and my dad played a bit of fiddle. And I remember when I was a kid, they would take us around all the little village halls where there was like kiddie dances. And I used to love our Scottish country dance bands. Well, they were just kind of like a band made for dancing, and did this kind of eclectic. There'd be a fiddle player, maybe a piano player, a bass player, and an accordion player, and they'd play for dancing, and they would have this kind of eclectic kind of mix of pipe tunes and fiddle tunes and tunes they'd written themselves, and the odd kind of weird kind of European tune that they would throw in. And so I remember as a wee boy, that was one of my ambitions, was to be a drummer in a Scottish country dance band.
Oh, wow.
But my earliest memories, I used to love it. And so I played the fiddle, and that's where that's where all that came from. I was able to spend a lot of time. Mum and dad would go to these dances, and they would dump us beside the stage as kids, you know. And and so you learned all these tunes kind of by osmosis, you know. So when it came to playing the fiddle myself, I realized I knew all these tunes anyway from sort of growing up with them, you know. So it's brilliant. And then I went on to become a songwriter, and I was influenced by quite a lot of, you know, the American songwriters, you know, when I was young. You know, the kind of Joni Mitchells, Bob Dylans, you know. I like Jackson Browns, James Taylors, you know. I love that kind of American songwriting. And so with my own kind of roots background in the kind of Gaelic songs and a mixture of that sort of contemporary thing that was happening, particularly in America at that time, you know, it kind of distilled to be what I do now.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of interesting things that happened in the music halls of Scotland, and how many you know, modern and contemporary genres and music were started back then, or at least influenced by those touring bands.
Scottish culture was very kind of it was popular among just normal people, you know, and so you couldn't escape it. You know, we had a TV program called The White Heather Club on New Year. I remember when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and it would be kind of almost music hall sort of type Scottish music, but there was always a nice band playing an old bagpipe reel or an old Gaelic air or something, you know. So it was always around, and I think you'll find that most contemporary Scottish musicians would look back to that as having, you know, been one of the reasons why they got into that sort of thing, you know.
Or, absolutely.
Or why it was easy for them to do it, because it was all around at that time, you know.
Dougie, you've toured in countries all over the world to great reception. What is it about Scottish folk music that draws people in?
I don't know. I think there's something about the, you know, the Scottish and Irish people have music in a big part in their culture, you know. It's like eating, breathing, sleeping, you know, and singing, you know. And so the music's very, it's very accessible, I think, you know. It's because people use it in their everyday lives, you know. I know that my own family, you know, whenever there was a party, the chairs would get put back, and people would sing and play some of our old tunes and stuff like that. So it's very accessible, and I think when Scottish musicians have travelled around the world, the kind of accessibility of that music has been kind of very for other people, you know. They've immediately got sort of access through it, you know. And it's kind of infectious, kind of. Particularly our dance tunes are very infectious, and the beautiful melodies, you know. The music's made from. It came from a time when there was no music industry, so that people were writing these things and making these things up for the right reasons. You know, they were genuine songs and genuine tunes, not just made to be kind of hit singles or that, or invented in a recording studio. They were things that people sang in their kitchens and out in the fields when they were working, and so they have an incredible appeal, you know, and it's very infectious music, I think.
Those are good points, very good points. My wife and I named our first daughter Caledonia, and as you can imagine, your song Caledonia is a favourite of ours. When I sing it to her, I'm singing both about my homeland as well as her. Can you share a bit about the story behind that song?
Yeah, well, I wrote it when I was in my early 20s on a beach in France. I was actually traveling around with three Irish guys, and we were just busking. I had been working with the band, and then I had some time, and we just took off, and we were busking around the cities of Europe. And I got homesick, and Caledonia is the word that it's what the Romans called Scotland. In fact, the area where I live here, the Romans called the tribe that lived around here the Caledoni, with two I's at the end, and so Caledonia comes from that. Is another word which means Scotland, and I was homesick, and I wrote a simple little homesick song, and now it's become, it's played at football games, rugby matches, you know, weddings, funerals. It's quite incredible how much it's become part of common culture here in Scotland, you know, and when anybody's having some kind of celebration, they will inevitably probably sing this song, and it's quite nice to have watched it grow from a little song that I wrote on a beach, being genuinely homesick, to what it is now, you know, and it's a huge song in Ireland as well, you know, and in fact the Irish think it's theirs, you know, I have to keep reminding them that it's not.
Yeah.
But it is, it's unusual, it's become part of common culture, and not many songs make that transition from, you know, the concert stage to people using them in their own family ceremonies and things, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, that's exactly the folk music process, right? You know.
But that's exactly, yeah. That's it. I've been able to watch my song become part of that process, you know, where people think it's an old song and they think it's been around for years, you know.
Yeah.
They probably don't know who wrote it. It's just one of them songs that they would sing if somebody said it at a party, go and sing a song, you know, people might sing that song, you know.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's a lovely thing as a songwriter to have written something that has done that, you know, and it's been covered by thousands of musicians, and not just Scots, but Americans, you know, German people, Australian people, and the Irish, of course, you know, and it seems to have something about a sense of belonging inside the song, so it doesn't, you don't have to be Scottish to kind of get the sentiment of it, you know.
Yeah.
And but it's about that sense of belonging, I think, which everybody craves for in our modern world.
Well, when we started playing it for my daughter when she was very young, you know, 2 and 3, she obviously thought the song was about her, and had to gently gently let her in on that, but she loves it. And
it's a lovely name for a girl, actually. Yeah,
we thought so. We wanted to have her in Scotland, but we couldn't, so this was the next best thing.
Yeah.
But I told her I was going to speak with you today, and she said, tell him thank you for the song.
Okay, that's lovely.
Of the hundreds of songs you've written, can you speak briefly just about your process of songwriting? You know, which comes first, the music or the lyrics, and where do you get inspired?
Well, for me, it's a bit of a strange, magical process, and I can't really put my finger on a particular way that it happens. It kind of all happens at the same time, you know. I have a very good musical ear for melodies, and so I love songs with, you know, the melody has to be nice to write it to, but I tend to find that the melody, you know, I might have a little riff and it'll suggest a melody, and the melody will suggest a lyric, and the lyric will suggest a melody, and it kind of goes like that. And it is sometimes quite magical because, you know, you end up sitting with it, and then before you know where you are, you have a verse and chorus of a song, and you go, boy, where did that come from? How did that come up? You know, where was that hiding, you know?
Yeah.
And I like to not think about it too much, you know. I like to kind of keep that kind of magical, unfathomable part to the songwriting. I know some songwriters say that there are kind of structures and
very methodical
techniques and things like that. I think you can do it that way, but I don't think you necessarily write nice, you know, magic songs that way. I think when you just let yourself go and let your brain head out into that weird place, you know, you're more likely to pick up something magic. First thing in the morning is a good time to be doing something like that because your brain hasn't gotten clouded over with the problems of the day, you know, so you're still in that kind of half-sleep, half-waking kind of state where your brain seems to be more kind of able to go into that particularly creative kind of place. And very late at night's another good time to be sort of sitting down and thinking about that because your brain's tired from the troubles of the day. And so it kind of passes over at that other place again, you know. So, yeah, it's magic. I think, you know, my little daughter, when she was asked when she was young, she said, what does your daddy do, you know, and she says, my daddy's a magician, you know. And I think we are magicians, you know. I think there is a certain amount of magic in it all.
Yeah. Well, you've been sharing that music for many years, and you've had quite a bit of success in the U.S., I noticed, being named favorite male vocalist on the Thistle and Shamrock radio show. And you've also developed an artistic relationship with country singer Kathy Mattea. So how was that connection fostered, and can you discuss some of the influences that Scottish and Celtic music have had on America?
Yeah, well, I've been traveling all across America over the last 20 years. It's been brilliant for me, and it's been a great opportunity to get to explore various parts of. I think I probably know America better than most Americans. I've been in every little sort of nook and cranny, all the different audiences, and I love it. I feel very privileged to have been able to kind of travel around and perform to a, you know, great wide kind of section of American public, and met a lot of great musicians. You know, like Kathy, we met up at some show, and we actually just realized, you know, that we had a lot in common, you know, because the country music has a lot of its origins in kind of old songs that came from Scotland and Ireland, and that was a number of years back now, but we got on like a house of fire, and I went down to Nashville and spent a whole bunch of time with them there and learned a little bit about the Nashville music scene, which is very different from what I do up here in Perthshire, you know. But so I think there's been something very great about the kind of the connection between Scotland and Ireland, and a lot of us musicians going and touring America, and Americans getting a chance to kind of maybe have a wee look at the spirit of where a lot of their own music comes from, you know, which has been an interesting adventure. I remember many years ago I did I was in my 20s, and I got a job driving Doc Watson and Merle Watson and their family around Europe because I knew it. And I would sit in the hotel with the Doc, and he'd play these, you know, old timey tunes, and I would say, "Oh, we play it this way in Scotland. It's an old tune called this," you know. And we had great fun, kind of exchanging tunes and going, "Well, you know," he'd say, "This is called Whiskey in the Bowl or something," you know. And I would say, "Well, that's John McMillan of Barra or something," you know, that what we call it, that, you know. So there's this lovely kind of exchange that has been, and I think in more recent years lots of musicians, and not just, you know, but the Scottish and American musicians have been exploring that place, you know, and it's fascinating.
Well, and people, when they do move to a different country, and there have been lots of Scots immigrating, they bring their music, don't they?
Yes, I mean, there's been a couple of really interesting programs recently about how a lot of the original cowboys were Scottish. You know, it was Scottish drovers who would bring the cattle down from the Highlands of Scotland down to the big markets in the Central Belt. And so when they emigrated to America, it was natural for them to get jobs as cowboys because they'd already been experienced in moving herds of cattle around, you know. And so they would take their songs with them, and then some of these songs have become cowboy songs, and you can see all the lovely kind of connections. It's fascinating.
Very interesting. So what's your relationship like with fans of your music? How do you keep in touch with them?
Well, I have a great bunch of people who come to my shows and who over the years have been brilliant at the concerts, and I try to keep everything quite informal, you know, and when I'm doing my concerts, I like to involve the audience in singing with me and tell funny stories, and I try to make the concerts feel like just being in my kitchen, you know.
Yeah.
And I've always spent a lot of time chatting to people, and I think it's very important for a musician to, well, you don't do the concert on your own, you know, a concert is a musician and an audience, and you both play your own, you know, you both play a part in making a good evening, you know.
Yeah.
So it's And I remember getting some great advice from an old folk singer called Alex Campbell, who was one of the original guys who, and he said, Dougie, he says, when you go on the stage, he says, the first thing you do, he says, is you take your ego off and you leave it on a chair in the dressing room. And I've always liked to kind of live by that kind of philosophy. So I have a great relationship with the people who have been following my music over the years.
Now, Perthshire Amber, the music festival you started, is now in its 11th year. Thousands of people gather in your beautiful home county of Perthshire to hear you and other artists from around Scotland and beyond. What was the inspiration for this annual event?
Well, it started off as a small weekend event, and I was asked to make a wee concert, and I thought it would be a great idea to sort of do some music in the part of the country, part of the world, you know, that has inspired all the songs, and so and try and encourage my fans and the people who've been supporters, you know, from all different countries, to come and actually visit the place where a lot of the songs, the inspiration comes from. Because I'm a rural boy and worked on the land when I was young, there's a lot of the kind of that rural thing in my songs, you know, and so I just thought it was a nice idea to let people explore that a bit more, and it's grown over the last 10 years, and it's not just about music. We take people out on walks and talks, and we have historic walks and just to try and educate people a little bit in about this wonderful part of Perthshire, which they could quite easily miss if they came to Scotland and just disappeared up the A9 heading for the Loch Ness to see the Loch Ness Monster.
Indeed.
You know? And so it's a great opportunity for them to come and spend some time and learn a bit about this lovely place and see where I wrote all the songs.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a beautiful event, and I do hope to make it myself sometime.
Yeah, no, it is. It's quite unique and has a funny kind of community feeling about it. You know, it's because it's in my house. Well, not in my house, but it's in my backyard. But
yeah,
we have 10 days of shows it's grown. I mean, we have concerts in castles and town halls and all across the Perthshire, which is the sort of state, which is the kind of county, is on the banks of the Big River Tay, which runs through Perthshire. So it's fascinating. 10 days, we love it, and I try not to repeat any songs. So I do a show every night with a special guest, big guest, you know, and I try not to repeat myself. So it's quite a challenge, but it's good fun.
Well, in the last 20 years, the digital revolution has changed how music is produced and delivered. How have these changes affected you as an artist and a record producer?
Well, in the beginning, it was quite difficult to kind of to understand where it was all going to go, you know. And we lost a lot of our sales, which it probably didn't hit the big guys so much, but us smaller independent record companies, we had some problems with it. But actually, as it has turned out, I'm very lucky that both my son and myself are quite techie kind of characters, and
yeah.
So we do all kinds of things now in a way that we would never have done them before, and all kinds of other opportunities sort of open themselves, and I'm a great believer that when one door closes, another door opens, and you never know where you're going to end up on that journey, and now with things like iTunes and that, people can get the record, can be listening to the music and buy it, I would never have done a concert, or they would never have heard of me. So it's fascinating now with the digital revolution, we have a kind of global there's a global audience for everybody. You can get, I remember people used to say, oh, I can't get your record in the local store, you know.
Yeah.
Now there's no excuse for that. People can get the record anywhere, you know, so that's a brilliant thing.
Well, and one good example is Butterstone.tv, where people can take guitar lessons from you and watch concerts that they couldn't attend. It's quite something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the brilliant things which we're doing over the last couple of years. I do a live broadcast now with four cameras in high definition in the old school where I live, in a little village of 10 houses, and I live in the old school that I went to, and my father went to it in the 1930s, and I bought it in the 80s sometime and turned it into a recording studio, and now we film in there, and I have an hour broadcast where And we have people from all over America, from Europe, from Norway, Sweden, Australia, New Zealand. We had our first people from Russia. And that's fascinating. And people, I can talk to them because it's actually live, you know. And we could never have done that before, you know. I mean, to imagine, you know, sitting in my old school here in Perthshire and being able to sing a song and you can, you know, on the internet in New Zealand can be watching the show just a few seconds later. It's mind-boggling what the technology is allowing us to do. And I've done guitar lessons on there, so I use a number of unusual tunings, you know, and people keep asking me about how I play the song. So I did a series of lessons there where people can go and have a look at how I actually do it, you know, and that's been a fantastic thing to be able to share that with the people who are interested. It just gets better all the time.
Yeah. Now, I understand you, excuse me, you started your own record company, Dunkeld Records. And I just wondered if you would comment on some of the new and upcoming folk acts that you're personally excited about seeing develop.
It's a very interesting time in Scotland. You know, the along with a kind of political self confidence, also there's a kind of cultural self confidence. You know, that is coming out, and too many bands to even begin to mention.
Yeah.
on our program. You know. And it's very, very fascinating. And because of the internet and Facebook and all these things, lots of these young musicians are getting their music out to be, you know, to other people to be heard. And it's just such an incredible collection. It wouldn't be fair to single anyone out, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So in 2014, it was a big year for you. You celebrated 40 years as a musician, and you got to partner with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra on an album. What was that like?
Well, that was brilliant. I mean, that's one of the highlights of my musical career, was actually to do the album with the Symphony Orchestra and to do a couple of concerts with them, which I did last year, which was absolutely amazing, you know. And I have, over the last 10 years or so, I've been working with classical musicians, but not on that scale, you know, I've worked with little string sections and stuff, you know, but to work with the full symphony orchestra with the, you know, all the brass and woodwind and the timpani, and it was brilliant. And it was very difficult to do the concerts with them because I was listening to them so much, you know. I was very hard to kind of concentrate on my own singing.
Yeah.
They'd come in and there'd be this beautiful, big, thick sound behind you, and you'd feel yourself rising off the stage, you know.
So, Doogie, what can we look forward to next from you?
Well, it never stops, you know. Another year turns around, and I have concerts. I just returned from Germany, actually, where I did a couple of festivals, and I spent a couple of days up on the Baltic coast, up on the islands up there. I'm recording a new record this year, hopefully. I'm writing a musical,
wow.
A musical theatre, yeah, which I'm really, really enjoying. A big project, so it's going to take me a little while, but I'm really enjoying that. And who knows, you know, every new week brings something else, you know, so it's just more of the same.
Well, I pray God will continue to energize you as you, you know, promote your music and enhance folk music in Scotland. I know that every listener I've talked to about this interview has just poured out immense respect for you as a man and what you're doing with your music. And so I just want to thank you for not only, you know, sharing some time with us today, but just everything you're doing to promote Scottish music.
Well, thank you very much. No, it's been lovely to talk to you and to say hello to any of my fans out there who haven't been in America for a wee while, you know, but I'm hoping to come over again in the next year sometime, you know. So
that sounds great.
See what happens, yeah.
Thanks very much, Dougie.
Not at all. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
That concludes this episode of Simply Scottish. To hear more, look us up on iTunes or Podomatic, or visit www.simplyscottish.com. And to get updates on new episodes and a chance every month to win a free Scottish CD, like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Just search Simply Scottish. I'll leave you with another of Doogie McLean's great songs. From the 2014 album Till Tomorrow, this is Holding Back. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again next time for more of All Things Scottish.
It's in the darkness of believing. It's in the shadows where we have to stand, beside the loving and the grieving.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
And all the truth it has to teach us, oh, I'll never understand. Holding back to listen to the ocean, holding back to dance inside the storm. I may be foolish, but I don't care, as long as you're there. From edge to edge we take our pleasure, we follow blindly each insane command. We're judged by some eternal measure, oh, I'll never understand. War and peace is child to no one. We're held together by an endless strand, first to be woven, then to be undone. Oh, I'll never understand. Holding back, I may be foolish, but I don't care, as long as you are there. Soon all the promises are broken, and expectation passes underhand, and not a gentle word is spoken. Oh, I'll never understand. It's in the darkness of believing, it's in the shadows where we have to stand, beside the loving and the grieving. Oh, I'll never understand. Holding back to listen to the ocean, holding back to dance inside the storm. I may be foolish, but I don't care, as long as you're there. Holding maybe.